One, the funny thing is, like, something extreme happened in the book, and then her dad was just like, "Oh, are you gonna write this into a comic too?" And she's like, "No." And I'm like, "I'm reading this in a comic book."
Rusty Quill presents Enthusiasm. Hello, friends and fans, and welcome to Enthusiasm, the show where we talk about a few of our favourite things. I am your host, Helen Gould, one of the best Rusty Quillers. And today we're talking about graphic novels, a very exciting genre of literature. And I am, what's a novels-related thing that means happy? Indescribably delighted to be joined by Ben, Gavia, Marissa, and Reese. As always, we shall introduce ourselves alphabetically. So, Ben, I'm afraid you're going first. Can you tell us your pronouns and what you do?
Yep, so I'm Ben Meredith, he, him. I'm a game designer and voice actor and Rusty Quill regular.
Yeah. Next up, Gavia.
Hi, I'm Gavia Baker-Whitelaw, she, her. I am the co-host of the movie podcast Overinvested. I also co-edit a fanfic newsletter called The Rec Centre, and I'm a staff writer at The Daily Dot, where I do film reviews and TV reviews and that sort of thing.
Wonderful. Marissa, how about you?
Yeah, my name is Marissa Ewing. My pronouns are she, her. I'm one of the audio editors for Rusty Quill, and I also own a production company called Hemlock Creek Productions.
And next, Reese.
Hi, I'm Reese Tirado. I'm a tech person at Rusty Quill, tech person at my day job. I write for the Nemesine podcast, and I'm just overall a writer.
All right. Okay. Oh, I'm really excited to talk about this because it's been a long time since I read a graphic novel, actually. Speaking of, let's get stuck in with what was the first graphic novel or comic book that you read? Would anyone like to cast their minds back into the dusty sands of time?
I guess stretching the definition of graphic novel, probably more into a comic book, but I'm going to say very Britishly, The Beano and the Dandy.
Oh my gosh, I completely forgot about those. Should we explain those for our American listeners?
I do not know what that is.
I also read those as a child.
They were both comic books with like funny cartoon strips in them with different regular appearances. And for me, it wasn't so much the comics. It was like the big
annuals,
bumper editions you'd get. Yes, the annual ones at the end of every year. So you had the Bash Street Kids and Dennis the Menace. And
but not the Dennis the Menace that a lot of people might be thinking about.
Not American Dennis the Menace. Horrible British Dennis the Menace.
Yeah.
There's an American.
Yeah. Dennis the Menace in America is like a blonde kid with dungarees,
yeah,
who annoys his neighbour.
What? No!
It's basically, yeah, it's like really nice Dennis the Menace.
The UK version is much more menacing.
Yeah.
Our Dennis the Menace has like really messy black hair and a black and red top and a dog called Nasher and uses his dog to threaten the general public.
Oh. All right.
And then the Dandy is similar. I mostly remember that there was a character who ate pies.
Desperate Dan.
Yeah.
Desperate Dan, yes.
Who was a big cowboy who ate whole pies, plate and all.
There's a big statue of him in Scotland because the publisher is in Dundee.
Oh, that's really funny. Does he have a pie?
I assume so. It's been a while since I visited old Dan.
That's a little insight into the British childhood of like up until, I mean, are they still being published?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, well then, current childhood too. Anyone else? Gavia, I think you were going to say something as well about your first.
Yeah, my first comics were the Asterix books, which I read just as I was learning to read because I wasn't very enthusiastic about reading as like a six-year-old, but I loved Asterix. And I remember as a very young child, my parents taking me to an adult lecture with the woman who translated all the Asterix books from French. And I was incredibly impressed by her. And I was like, wow, now I understand what translation is. Because you have to do all these puns and things from the French to the English.
Of course. That's really interesting. I'd completely forgotten about Asterix existing. This is what this episode is for, to remind us of all the excellent things that we've forgotten about. Marissa, Reese?
Yeah, I was just thinking like, God, I remember the series. It was like the Bone Saga or something. And it was just about like these
little white humanoid figures that, like, for some reason, I guess they're all related. They're known as the Bones or something. I remember, like, reading that and being super into it, and I cannot remember the plot for the life of me. It was the first graphic novel ever that I was just like, okay, let me pick this up. And I would, like, read through it, and then I'm just like, yeah, this is not going to stick with me ever. But it's something that, like, if you showed me the graphic novel, I'd be like, oh, I remember that. Don't know what happens in it. I just don't.
Marissa, then.
Yeah, so I'm actually relatively new in the world of graphic novels, just because, you know, growing up, they were pretty expensive. And I kind of got into them through webcomics and, like, just being on Tumblr and, like, reading comics like that. But the first one that I actually read was The Enigma of Amigari Fault by Junji Ito.
Is that the one with the holes?
Huh? The deep end.
Yeah, that was the one with the holes shaped in the cliff that fit a specific person. So that was definitely one way to jump into things, but then I just kind of went down the horror graphic novel rabbit hole for sure.
I only know that from the meme.
Yeah, you should definitely take a look at it if you're not squeamish. It's very good.
I really need to get into, like, Junji Ito's stuff. I read the Spiral one as well.
Yeah, I'm reading that one right now. I just got it from the comic book store like 2 days ago. I'm already like,
yeah.
It's something. That's really all I can say without spoiling it.
And it's just so extraordinarily detailed, as in the lines and the drawings of it.
Yeah, I have been into horror for quite some time, and I think I've kind of desensitized myself to it. So finding something that still makes me kind of, like, physically recoil after I've read it is rare, but these ones definitely do that.
Yeah, there was something I mentioned in, I think, the horror books episode about how I heard from this YouTuber that there's in Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark, you'll turn over a page and there'll be a horrible illustration on it. It's like getting jump scared by a book.
Oh,
and I think
God.
The Junji Ito also does that.
Yes.
Actually, I was meaning to say, because, like, the title of the podcast is graphic novels, but then kind of, like, the intro email I got was also comics. And I'm like, I hope it includes kind of all of the comics things, because I mean, like, sequential comics, it's kind of an ambiguous term.
It does feel like a broadly meaningless distinction, doesn't it? Like, I don't know.
I think it's an interesting distinction, though, because, like, some web comics feel longer than, like, actual novels or graphic novels, but they have a lot of the same elements. Sometimes they'll have, like, audio. Like, I know it's kind of a lot, but Homestuck is a good example.
Yeah, there we go.
It's one of those things where, like, it's definitely laid out in the form of a graphic novel, other than the absurd videos that they slip in there, but
it's like, in a way, isn't Homestuck technically an opera?
Oh, Lord.
I love that. Did anyone follow that webcomic series? The guy who made it was called Alec Robbins, and I can't remember what he called it, but it was about being married to Betty Boop.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my friends really like it.
Was that on Twitter, where it was like an ongoing series, and, like, he was always getting, like, cucked by some rabbit or something?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, not really. Like, he and Betty Boop were very much in love.
Yeah, it's called Mr. Boop.
Mr. Boop. That's what it was called. Yeah.
Maybe it was an open marriage and I misinterpreted the couple of comics. That is also not a word I would typically use, but that was the framing of the joke that I saw on Twitter, I think.
In many ways, it was quite a sincere exploration of someone who is desperately in love with their partner.
Who is Betty Boop.
Yeah. Yeah. Portrayed as Betty Boop. And there were several comics that just, the punchline was him being like, God, I can't believe I'm married to Betty Boop. That was a fun little thing. I think it's finished now, but I haven't been tracking it lately. I just realized I didn't mention the first graphic novel / comic book that I looked at. I mean, if we're going by comic books, then it was definitely The Beano. Yeah, the first one I came across, like, graphic novel-wise, was The Crow. And it very much influenced my art GCSE projects. At one point, it was kind of, like, revelatory to me, because I was like, oh, I didn't realize that comics could do this and be really f***ing tragic. And it also introduced me to the concept of, like, a revenge drama, which is still a very fun genre for me.
I think that graphic novels and comics sometimes get, like, not a bad rap, but, like, people usually only think of them in terms of, like, superhero stories. So then when you have these novels, like one that I read recently was called The Man That Came Down the Attic Stairs, which is a horror novel that deals with like postpartum grief.
Wow.
And like you'll have things like that that like, you know, kind of feel like they come out of left field, because when you think of graphic novels, you really tend to focus on like superheroes in action.
Yeah.
But I kind of really like graphic novels as like a tool for exploring either grief or like just hard topics in general, because you can illustrate things that are hard to put into words.
I find myself really enjoying like autobiographical novels, or at least like content or comics that are along the lines of like autobiography. Like it's just comics telling their story.
It's so this author does, the first one is called My Lesbian Experience with Loneliness. And when I read it, I was just like, she just liked me for real. I was just like, oh, this is my whole life. That's great. Fantastic. And so I've been like collecting like all of it, just all of the ones that she's made. Cause it kind of helped me realize like, oh, okay, I'm not like totally alone in this. Like I get this. And half the time, like sometimes the things that happens are just really funny. And I'm just like, this is very sad and I'm so sorry, but it's so funny, like out of context. Like, yeah. I think the last one is called, cause every one of them is like, so the first one is My Lesbian Experience with Loneliness. Then it's like My Solo Exchange Diary 1 and 2. And then the one I just showed on camera was My Alcoholic Escape from Reality. And so the last one is more about like her relationship with like alcohol, which a lot of it, I was just like, I relate to this a little bit too hard. The funny thing is like something extreme happened in the book. And then her dad was just like, oh, are you going to write this into a comic too? And she's like, no. And I'm like, I'm reading this in a comic. And I'm just like, this is really funny, but I can only imagine how upset her dad is. Yeah. So I don't know. I've been finding myself just really enjoying autobiographical, like graphic novels. They're really good for, I guess, not feeling so alone and like whatever you're dealing with.
I think that goes for like all literature though. What's that? Oh, there's a James Baldwin quote somewhere. He says something like, you think that you are the only person to have experienced this depth of emotion, and then you read a book.
Yes.
Oh, so he like, he's like, oh, you read Dostoevsky and you realize that like Dostoevsky experienced this 100 years ago. Or maybe it's like another Russian.
Yeah. with this specific novel, it's like I grew up thinking like this is an incredibly like unique set of like, you know, experience that I'm having. Like I'm Black, I'm a lesbian, I'm non-binary, I'm, you know, in the closet, sort of. Like it was just like, to me it felt like such a small thing, and then I'm like reading what she's going through and I was just like, I'm not the only one. Fantastic. We should all make a club and just meet up and hang out. And it's probably not ever gonna happen, but I'm just kind of like, oh, I love this so much. I love the fact that I'm not alone. And I think actually I came across this when I went to, God, what is that one bookstore? There's a bookstore in New York that I would frequent when I lived in New York. I can't even remember. It was like a queer bookstore. So it had like all of like a different, an entire range of different books, even graphic novels. And so like when I came across that there, I was just like, oh, this looks interesting to me. And then like I went and bought it and I was just like, oh, this is the only thing that matters to me for the rest of my life.
I think that's very relatable. I'm still thinking about whether there is a difference between graphic novels and comics.
For me, the main distinction seems to be that graphic novels are typically self-contained. Like, there might possibly be a couple volumes, but I think, like, you know, you might have, like, up to 6. But a lot of them are just, like, you pick up the book, you read it, and you're done. But comics seem to evolve and change over time. And, like, that's one of the reasons that I'm not as into comics is just because like it's kind of hard of like where do you start when there's like this character has existed for like 40 years, you know?
That's quite interesting because I guess like because one of the big ones that got me because I, you know, had kids sort of like Beano Dandy, Asterix, that kind of stuff. But then I didn't read anything at all. Like I'm not into superheroes like Marvel and DC comics or anything like that. But I picked up The Wicked and the Divine because apparently my my tastes are anything that's published by Image. But The Wicked and Divine has, like, it released as weekly issues, like, you know, any of your comics, but then it's a finite story and then it's bundled into larger volumes. And there are about, I think, 8 volumes or so. Mm-hmm. So it's
like, a lot of them are kind of the monthly release thing. I mean, you know, it's one of these sort of like age old debates that happens at loads of comic conventions. And it's like, what do you classify like Sandman as? Because it's 12 volumes long and it was released by DC. And it's like, you know, shrug. Some things are definitely a graphic novel and other things are kind of ambiguous, I guess.
Yeah.
I just feel like a graphic novel is a comic book that you're trying to sell to somebody who doesn't like comics.
I think Alan Moore was like, it's a marketing term and I have no strong opinion because it's just there to like tell people whether to buy Watchmen or not.
It sort of like ascribes worthiness to something if you're like, oh, no. This isn't a comic. It's a graphic novel.
That's really interesting.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I was just going to say, going back to what Marissa said about like not knowing where to start reading a comic when like a character has existed for like 40 something year. This is why I only ever pick up when it comes to indie when it comes to comics, I always pick up indie comics. Like, so I brought a couple of them here because
more show and tell. Yes.
So this one, Surrounded by Death, is a zombie comic. And the way I happened upon this, of course, being the nerd I am, it was Comic-Con. And I was just walking around because there's always in Comic-Con, there's like Artist Alley. So a lot of people are there to try and just, you know, sell their own comics. So I'm walking around and I see this guy who's like selling like something zombie related. I'm like, OK, I like zombies. That's cool. I go over, talk to him. He, you know, gives me a pitch. And I was just like, all right, I'll buy your comic. So I pay him. I go home. I kind of like I start getting into it. Like sometimes I do, sometimes I just kind of leave it there to collect dust. But this time I was like, oh, let me open this up and read it. And I got immediately hooked because the whole premise of this comic is these guys, you know, a zombie apocalypse happens. There's a group of people that start to live in, there's a community of people now living in the mall, right? And everything is pretty much more or less okay. They've got supplies, they got what they need, etc. But then the worst thing that could possibly happen happens, and it's the fact that their favorite coffee runs out, and so everyone goes nuts. They're like, we want our coffee. And the leaders are just like, are you really gonna have us risk our lives just so you can have coffee? And then one of the leaders like has a crush on this character who, by the way, never shows up. Like, you never see this character on camera, which is wild to me, but I kind of find this really funny. And she's just like, yeah, guys, don't worry about it. And the leader is just like, actually, never mind. We're going to go get the coffee. And so it's just, to me, it feels very human that, you know, in the midst of this entire like zombie situation, they're like, damn, we really need coffee if we're going to not be at each other's throats. So like, yeah. I read that all in, it was like only 2 issues that he sold me. So I read it all. And I went back to, because I had like a 3-day ticket to Comic-Con, went back the next day, found the guy. I was like, I need to know what happens next. And he's like, did you actually read that? I'm like, yes. Tell me what happens next. And like to this day, we're like, we're mutuals on Twitter because I was just like, this is brilliant. Aww. I want more. And I ended up like, I think this was like on Kickstarter. So like he published it himself on Kickstarter. And so like for me, it's like I love comics, but I love to get into more indie comics. Like, DC and Marvel is fine. The only Marvel comics I own are, like, America Chavez, and that's because she looks like me, like full on. But, like, that, like, when it comes to comics, I prefer going to, like, indie comics because I don't have to stress about, like, where do I start from the beginning? There's only, like, one beginning.
I'm the same. Tell you what, let's take a little break, and when we come back, let's talk some more about our favorite, maybe even favorite storylines and favorite things that we've read, and we'll see how we get on. Hello, everyone. Helen here, who you probably know from Rusty Quill's first podcast, Rusty Quill Gaming, or from our chat show, Enthusiasm. Today, I'm here to tell you about Chapter and Multiverse, the new actual play podcast from Rusty Quill. Across each series of Chapter Multiverse, we'll be diving into multiple tabletop systems. No two series will ever be the same as we explore the city of Chapter across alternative universes. Chapter and Multiverse will feature a diverse rotating cast of performers. In our first series, GM Maddie Searle will be running a campaign of Masks: A New Generation, designed by Brendan Conway. She will be joined by Ahmed Aljabri, Laurie Ann Davis, Lydia Nicholas, and Pip Gladwin as intrepid young superheroes in the metropolis of Chapter, with Kareem Cronfley as the Eternal Tavern Keeper. Search for Chapter and Multiverse wherever you listen to your podcasts, or visit
www.rustyquill.com for more information. Enjoy.
And welcome back. Okay, so let's talk about our favorites now. I want to hear the stories and graphic novels and or comics that you have most enjoyed over the years, or that is one that you keep coming back to. I will say I was really into Saga for a while, and then I caught up and realized I had to wait, and then other stuff happened, and now I am not caught up again, and I've got no idea what's going on. And now I'm trying to think how to describe what Saga is.
Well, it's very long.
Yeah. It's like
Romeo and Juliet.
In space.
Space opera.
Amazing.
From the perspective of Romeo and Juliet's child. And Saga, I think, is the one with the cat that can
lie. Lying cat.
Like, yeah. So there's a cat and it can tell if you lie, and it will go lie at you if you do that. This is a useful pet to have. But yeah, that was one of my favorites. What about you?
I think one of my current favorites, my wife got me this one for Christmas. It's called Secret Life. And it's basically the happenings of the company, which they don't explain what the company is or does, but it just focuses on different people that work there. But it has kind of that same, like, incomprehensible vibe as Welcome to Night Vale, where, like, you listen to an episode and you're like, why is there an angel in this town? But then just kind of accept that there's an angel in the town. So it's a very similar vibe to that, but it all takes place in, like, this very secretive and possibly evil company. And it focuses on, like, a janitor, a secretary, a woman that just approves things. Her job is just stamping an approval stamp on paper. Just follows them as they work at this company. And it's so good.
I'd love to have that job.
And it's like, it's in my brain now. I finished it like a day after I got it. And I'm about ready to read it again because it was just so weird, but so interesting. And like, you, it's hard to even like, at times, like, recognize what's going on. You're just like, why are the janitors like this? What is going on? But it's so, so good. I can't recommend it enough. It's so good.
And it was called, what did you say it was called?
It's called Secret Life by Theo Ellsworth. But apparently it's an adaptation of a story by Jeff Vandermeer. But I've never read the original story. I've just read the graphic novel. And it has this, like, very weird, like, distorted, I don't know if you can see, but, like, this very weird distorted, like, art style. But it's so good.
Ooh, fun. Ben, what about you?
I've got the last thing, or, like, new thing that I've read, which was bought for me as a gift, but it's Ronald Wimbley's Prince of Cats, which I've got a lot of adaptations, because this is literally Romeo and Juliet, but retold in, I think, like, 80s New York, but with samurai swords.
Ooh.
It's very cool, and it is just one volume, so it just goes through. Oh, sorry, no, it's not Romeo and Juliet. It's Romeo and Juliet as told from the perspective of, I want to say Mercutio, but I can't remember. The one who's called Prince of Cats, but I can't remember.
I think that is Mercutio.
Yeah, yeah, so Mercutio is the main character, and it's, like, how his life intersects with the main story of Romeo and Juliet. But it's very cool, very stylish. It's just great stuff. And then the other one I have, which started off as a webcomic, is a webcomic. And again, both of these are published by Image, but has been turned into a physical copy, is Kill 6 Billion Demons by Tom Parkinson Morgan, or Abaddon, which is just fantastically stylish, about a girl called Allison who gets a cosmic key pushed into her head by a ghost horse night man who appears in her bedroom, and then she gets transported to the realm of God, well, to heaven, but not really heaven. But it's great. It's really just quite wild. The art style is beautiful. But the one thing about the physical copies, as I have here, I've got the three volumes, and they're all different sizes, which is awful. It's really nice, and I wanted the actual art on paper so that I could, like, properly look at it, you know, closely. But I really hope they reissue these as a standard size so I can buy them all again.
Gavia, what about you? What's your favourite?
Mine is a series called Finder by Carla Speed McNeil, who started publishing these comics in the mid-90s and has continued through to now. The most recent volume came out, like, last year. And it's not very well known, but it kind of has a very dedicated following, which explains why it's still going. The closest kind of comparison I would make from sort of more mainstream I guess, like, geek culture would be Terry Pratchett, because it's a fantasy-ish setting. Like, it's a sci-fi fantasy, somewhat contemporary-seeming culture, but there's lots of individual stories with different characters and subgenres within the world that Carla's created. So, like, they describe it as Aboriginal science fiction. So the main character is kind of like an indigenous analog character in the world of the story. And then there's like also there's like sort of American white cultures as well. There's a lot of stuff that kind of overlaps with like the present day, but it's very clearly like a sci-fi fantasy world. And yeah, there's like every genre in there. And the main character is this guy who he's like the sin eater. So he kind of has to take the blame for like ritual crimes and stuff. And he just goes around having little adventures, but mostly it's not in a kind of adventure narrative. It's more in the style of a kind of Gen X memoir comic where it's just like a bunch of queer people hanging out in a bar having social problems. But then, you know, there'll be like a fantasy thing. It's very hard to describe, but it's a really fantastic sort of multi-genre comic with lots of different characters that kind of always feels fresh with each new like section of the world you explore.
Am I right in thinking that the origin of the concept of a sin eater is like when someone died, you would like transfer their sins into like cakes or something and then someone would eat the cakes?
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of based on like various real world's ideas and concepts.
I need to look that up because that's such an interesting, that's one of those weird little jobs from history that like I just love.
It's like he's the ritual scapegoat, which is like what he is,
yes,
kind of positioned, yeah, within the culture that he was raised in, but also kind of his job is the title of the comic, which is Finder. So he's really good at like finding stuff, and that is a skill that can be like put onto any problem and means that like he can kind of go to different places and be like the quote unquote finder in like different scenarios. And that's how the narrative sort of is structured.
That sounds super cool. Reese, how about you? Any particular favorites you want to talk about?
I know we were trying to stay away from Marvel. However,
it's okay. We haven't really mentioned them so far, so we can shove this in at the end.
Yes. Okay. So I just really love America Chavez. She looks like me. I cosplay as her all the time. So basically, she's supposed to be like, I guess, like, you know how they redo like superheroes every couple of years. So yeah. There was a superhero called Miss America. I think the original was like blonde white woman. Remade her into this like really cool Latina who. Okay, so what I really loved about her origin is she is literally like an actual like alien from space, and yet like her entire like culture is literally like just Latin culture. So they're just like the creators are like, okay, so if white people can have their culture in space, why can't we do that? And I was like, you know what, you're right, you're valid, absolutely, like just big brained. That was could not have done that better myself. So she's like literally like this alien who can fly. She's literally bulletproof and she can punch holes into other dimension and also time. Oh. She's just like super cool. And like, I'm just like, you know what? She could have defeated Thanos. Like that's just how it could have gone. She could have just defeated Thanos. She's relatively new, I'm going to say. So there's not a lot out there about at least this rendition of her, which I'm grateful for, because then it doesn't like I'm not like trying to hunt down every single comic that she's ever been in, which I have done. I've read everything about her except for the newest one, because they took a turn somewhere and I was like, I don't like that. But yeah, so I really love America Chavez and I cannot wait to see her in the new Doctor Strange movie this year. They should have just casted me, but you know what, I'm not gonna be salty about that. It's fine.
There's always next time.
Always next time.
So I've got quite a broad-reaching question next. What do we think it is about graphic novels and comics that's like appealing as opposed to a book that's just words or a cartoon or other visual media? Like, what is it about them that we like? I think for me, I like that I'm kind of speed running a story. Like I could finish like a whole book.
I mean, I think like comics are kind of like poetry, because the like, ooh, the volume of words is very small compared to a, you know, like a novel.
Yes.
And like technically you can read it really fast, but they have to condense a vast amount of information and kind of emotional impact into a really small amount of page space. And if you get really invested, it kind of like, it gets into your brain correctly. So it's like, it's that, that's kind of what makes comics unique as a medium. Like, it's different from watching a movie where you're not in control of like the speed at which you're absorbing the story. So you can't kind of go back and be like, oh, I'm kind of getting it at this speed. And then just also kind of the experience of seeing someone else's aesthetic, because you like, you're not kind of required to visualize anything. Like, I'm not very good at visualizing stuff. So I like seeing, you know, really imaginative art. Like, my favorite artists are usually people who just have really interesting, complex fantasy landscapes visually, because I just like find that really cool and impressive. So that's, you know.
And I definitely agree about the kind of seeing somebody else visualize something, because when you read a book, like, obviously you have your own brain, so like I at least tend to imagine things in roughly the same way because I'm the one imagining them, whereas yeah, this that it's being realized in somebody else's vision, and that's sometimes more interesting. I also find that like there are much more, well, no, every medium is infinitely flexible with enough creativity, but I feel like because it's the like visual and the written kind of mesh together, that there's a lot, it's a lot easier to get creative in a lot quicker, and I think a lot more accessibly. Because if you think about, you know, formerly weird books, you think about stuff like Ulysses and House of Leaves and stuff, which are just incredibly inaccessible objects. But then every single comic and graphic novel is kind of doing what they're doing by playing around with form and the number of panels and the way they're spaced and where the speech bubbles go. And I think it's just an immediate access to something that's formerly very, very interesting.
And there's no requirement to spend hundreds of millions of dollars on special effects.
Yeah.
Although I think we should state that illustrators and artists are often very underpaid for the stuff that they produce. Yeah. Pay your artists, everybody.
That's something I've wound up writing about quite a lot of work, because there's very regularly kind of scandals at the big two publishers in that regard.
Rhys, Marissa, any thoughts on why graphic novels and comics are cool?
I think it's kind of interesting, because I would say that for me personally, graphic novels are probably one of my favorite ways to consume stories, which is incredibly ironic because I am an audio editor by trade and I picked the medium that has no audio. But I think there's something about the style of graphic novels and the way that they can convey stories that I think is really interesting, because I feel like in film and TV, like, there's definitely an emphasis on those visual mediums for sure, but like graphic novels really like take it up a notch, especially within the way that you stylize things like feelings and emotions, at least in the stories that I've read, that I think would look a little bit odd in film. I've seen it in some types of animated shows, but I don't know, there's just something about, you know, like a full page of art out of nowhere in a graphic novel that kind of catches you off guard. I know, Helen, you mentioned the Spiral Junji Ito book. And Junji Ito actually does have an anime where they took his stories and kind of adapted them and added sound and movement and things like that. But there's really nothing better, at least in horror graphic novels, I think, than when you just flip a page and things seem fine. And then there's just a full spread of like, I don't know what the fuck that is, but it's gross. That just kind of catches you off guard. And I feel like that surprise, almost that jump scare, is amplified in graphic novels, because in film you have like the audio leading up to it. You have like camera zooming, things like that. But when you just flip a page and it's something like that, like it can give you a good spook. And I really enjoy that.
For me, I like pictures. I like pretty pictures and colorful pictures. I just really enjoy a good picture. I've mentioned like my friend who created the comic Sweetie. So he regularly does like streams where he like shows his process. And so I'm also like very fascinated in the process that goes into creating like a comic or a graphic novel. So like the placement of the panels and like what color palette do you use? And even like the type of font.
And like, we all hate Comic Sans, but you know what? It's really useful. So it's just like, I really like just the creation, and I really appreciate the creation of like comics and stuff. And comic artists really just do not get paid enough. They really need to get paid more. They do so much work. Yeah, so I'm just, and a lot of the times I kind of pick and choose like what comic I'll read based on like the art style, because I can't do art styles that like if it's primarily black and white and there's like a lot of movement. So like for instance, like a shonen manga, when there's like a lot of action and it's mostly black and white, my brain can't make sense of what's going on. It's very hard for me to visualize it. Anything that's like really easy to comprehend on the page and like, you know, if throw in some color, get fancy with it, like then I'm just like, ah, yes, this is so nice for me.
I think that liking graphic novels and comics because the pictures are pretty is extraordinarily valid, because the art quality is very, very good.
So good.
Extremely underrated.
I also feel like it helps, like, when there's when it comes to adaptations to, like, film, going from book to, like, film adaptation, it leaves too much information up to the air with respect to, like, what the characters look like and what a certain thing, like, you know, portrays as. Whereas if I see a comic and I'm just like, okay, I like where this, you know, artist is going with this. I like the colors. I like the character design. Like, for me, character design is very important, because I don't like a lot of DC Marvel stuff, because sometimes they have like same body syndrome, where it's like every character has the same body type. And I'm just like, I'm not going to feel comfortable. If I feel like I'm not going to feel comfortable even trying to cosplay any of the characters, I'm probably not going to read it. So for me, it's like character design is very important. So if I don't see like more of a diverse set of like characters, and I'm just like, it's probably not for me.
I mean, I really do like superhero comics, but I get so frustrated with the lack of aesthetic variety in the movie adaptations, because, you know, in every interview with someone who's directing a DC or Marvel like movie or TV show, they always harp on about how dedicated they are to the comics. And it's like, oh, I grew up reading Doctor Strange religiously. It's like, well, I mean, probably you didn't, but that's fine. That's not your job to do that. But also, like, all of the visuals are like so kind of bland compared to, I mean, even like DC and Marvel is the kind of conservative side of comic book publishing. But even there, there's loads of really interesting artists. Like the art in the Ms. Marvel comics is like, it's very atypical for a superhero comic. And then you kind of watch a trailer for the TV show and you're like, this kind of looks like every teen drama. So I kind of wish that just more movie filmmaker people would be allowed to express themselves in the way that comic book artists do.
So here's a question. Has anyone seen the film of Sin City?
Yeah.
Okay. That's only half of us that's seen it then. So I won't go on about this too much. But I didn't know that was a graphic novel first. But in hindsight, I really should have done, because they really, really emulate. Like, it's all in black and white, and there's some really stark lighting and shots in it that completely look like they're from the page. And while thinking about it now, I'm not sure it was that good of a film.
Yeah, I mean, I respect that it was, like, you know, visually really distinctive. You do rewatch it now and you're like, this was very misogynist.
Yeah, but I wanted to just mention that as an example of someone definitely being...
Well, it was co-directed by the guy who did the comic, which is probably part of the reason why.
That makes sense. It was such a bizarre film. I really didn't know what I was watching at the time. I watched so much weird stuff as a teenager. We have time for one more question. I want to talk about where you'd recommend someone who's new to the medium to start. Like, what do you think is like a good starter comic or graphic novel for someone to get into?
I'd make them like fill out a genre questionnaire, because it's kind of like, it's like, what? There's so many like different like fields to go into. And like, if they were like, please recommend me your favorite memoir comics, I'd be like, speak to Reese. But if they were like, please recommend me, you know, superheroes or fantasy things, I'd be able to help out. It's like, you need to, you know, divine someone's personality. I realize that's not helpful for recommendations to the audience, but I'm like, no, I need my recommendations to be like pinpointed.
No, do you know, that's actually, I've asked this question about other topics before. This is actually a reasonably common answer, which I really appreciate, that there's like lots, people think and like have a lot of nuance in this, but Does anyone have any other ideas about it?
To a certain extent, I'd say start with webcomics because, I mean, obviously the audience who's listening to this is kind of self-selecting because the barrier for entry for webcomics is a decent internet connection, but you're listening to a podcast, so assumedly that's probably... You do probably have that. And they're free. And if you like them, you can go and support the person making them directly. And there's just so many. I mean, I personally would recommend Kill 6 Billion Demons just because it's very cool and I love it. But as Gavir says, like, depends what you like as a genre.
Yeah, I would also agree with Ben there because as someone that did the webcomic to graphic novel pipeline, that's definitely... they're a little bit more accessible and a little less overwhelming than walking into a graphic novel store and being like, okay, where do I start? But I would actually say, to be perfectly frank, as someone that's gotten into them relatively recently, every graphic novel shop that I've gone to has had staff that's been so kind and friendly with recommendations. And I would say that, you know, because especially they spend so much time looking over the comics and graphic novels that they get, asking them has pointed me towards some graphic novels that I don't think I would have picked up on my own, but they're so good at giving recommendations. So as long as you know like what general genre you'd like to go into, just going in and asking, I'm sure they'll be able to find something for you. It's a lot less intimidating than just like wandering through the aisles and hoping you pick the right one.
So I don't know how this slipped my mind, but I used to work at a comic book shop.
Oh!
Like, I don't know why it took me this long to be like, oh yeah, I used to work. Okay. I would get this question all the time working there. It's like, what do you recommend? And I'm just like, all right, so I'm just going to assume you don't care for Marvel or DC because that's very open-ended. And also, I wouldn't be able to help them either because I don't read any Marvel or DC outside of America Chavez. So a lot of the times I kind of go towards... I think the easy thing to get into is usually like middle grade comics, just because their middle grade usually has like a lot of different fun premises. It's very easy. It doesn't come with like hard hitting genres. Like there's not going to be like, oh, suddenly there's sexual assault. Like, you know, it's usually like very easy, kind of like an easy slide to go down. And the artwork also differs a lot. You can like find a lot of good, fun stuff. So that's where I always pointed them to. But yeah, it's such an open-ended question what to recommend. And yeah, I always go with like indie comics. It's very easy to recommend indie comics because it's a lot less intimidating when like, oh, this character has only been in existence for like 4 or 5 years versus, oh, this character has been around for 40 years and has like 52 variations and like all of these 52 variations. And then there's the issue with comics, they go out of print. So you don't want to start with a variation where down the line, you know, you can't find issue 32 or something. Like, you don't want to do that to yourself. So if people are looking to get into comics, I would not recommend DC or Marvel. I would say start with an indie comic, something that's maybe a little bit more recent. And yeah, that's just how I would help them out.
Yeah, the practical answer. I like that.
I don't know why it took me so long to remember. Yeah, I used to work at a comic.
This is not professional in the room.
Oh, my God. Thank you, listener, for coming with us on this meandering discussion. I'm going to see you on the next episode. But for now, it's goodbye from me. Goodbye. And it's goodbye from everybody else. You want to say goodbye?
Bye.
Enthusiasm is a podcast distributed by Rusty Quill and licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Share Alike 4.0 International License. It is directed by Helen Gould, produced by Laurie Ann Davis, with executive producers Alexander J. Newell and April Sumner, and edited by Marissa Ewing, Tessa Vroom, Maddie Searle, and Catherine Ranella. Thanks for listening.